This is an Equity Mates Media podcast.
Equity Mates.
I will say this about investing. Everything you do learn is cumulative. What I learned at 20 is useful.
Welcome to another episode of Equity Mates, a podcast where we will help you learn to invest in 20 minutes or less. We break down the world of investing from beginning to dividends so that you can hopefully make some returns. My name's Bryce, and as always, I'm joined by my equity buddy, Ren. How are you going, bro?
I'm very good, Bryce. How are you?
Very well, very well. Let's crack into it. No time for dilly-dally. We are going to revisit Ask Us Anything, the segment once a month where we answer to the best of our ability all questions that have come in from our listeners for that month. We didn't do any over December because we were having a break, so we have compiled all questions from December and January, and we are getting stuck in. There were so many that came through that we had to break this into two episodes. So I love it. Let's get stuck in, shall we, Ren?
Yeah, let's do it. John kicks us off today. He's been investing through Stake, but he can't seem to figure out how the movement of the US dollar compared to the Aussie dollar affects his shares. So can you explain, if the US dollar is increasing, is he better or worse off?
The US dollar is increasing, then you are better off when it comes to selling back into Aussie dollar at the end of the day. So you're better off. It's a good way, I guess, of investing through Stake gives you exposure to the US dollar. So you essentially have your investments in Australia in Aussie dollars, your investments in Stake in US dollars. If that US dollar is rising against the Australian dollar, then yes, you're better off, is the short answer to that. He also wants to know, you know, what can we do as investors to take advantage of weak Australian dollar? There are a lot of things you can do. I mean, there are even ETFs out there that, you know, long and short, that you can buy that follow the price of the Australian dollar. So if you think that it's going to start tanking, you can buy into a inverse ETF that will track against the Aussie dollar. It's an interesting game to play trying to hedge against currencies. I think with currencies, you need to be trading in huge amounts of money to take advantage of the, I guess, small changes in price. We're not talking, you know, the Aussie or US dollar moves in like large amounts, I guess. Ren, doesn't 2-3 cents here and there. We're talking points of cents more often than not. So to take advantage of those movements, you need to be trading in large dollars. But to answer your question, yes, if the Aussie dollar remains the same, or the US dollar, sorry, is increasing against the Aussie dollar, you're going to be better off when it comes to selling back into Aussie dollars. Do you have anything to add, Ren?
Yeah. So there are a couple of more straightforward ways to benefit from a weak Australian dollar rather than trying to trade currencies. I probably wouldn't recommend that unless you're a bit more advanced.
Yeah.
So some ways to benefit from a weak Aussie dollar. Number one, you can buy companies that make money overseas. So, you know, if they've got operations overseas, they're earning that foreign currency. And then when they report in Australia, they convert it back to Aussie dollars. So they do better. So an example of that would be Aristocrat Leisure, the pokey machine company, has over 50% of its operations in North America or the Americas. So, that's one way. The second way is you can buy Australian exporters. So as the Australian dollar falls, Australian exports that Australian companies are trying to sell into overseas markets become relatively cheaper and therefore more competitive. So they will likely do better with a weak Aussie dollar. And, you know, remember that exports is a broad term. When the Australian dollar is weaker, holidays to Australia become cheaper for foreign tourists. Like, there's a lot out there that there are a lot of industries that are out there that benefit from the Aussie dollar being weaker. A third way you can benefit is you can buy foreign companies. So jump on Stake, jump on whatever platform that you use that offers overseas trades, and buy companies that pay dividends in foreign currency. That will then get converted into AUD. And then, yeah, the last one that we touched on before was you can just buy foreign currency, but that's obviously a little bit riskier unless you're comfortable trading currency and understanding what moves currencies.
Yeah, nice.
Cool. All right. Next one comes from Kasia. The question relates to ETFs and specifically ethical ETFs. She wants to know, how do you know that these so-called ethical ETFs are actually ethical? And if you want to do specific things like invest in renewable energy and avoid the banks, how do you make sure you're doing that through your ethical funds? There's a second part, but I'll ask you that after.
It's a good question. Ethical funds are now, and sustainability funds are now becoming more and more popular. And so there's more coming onto the market through, you know, beta shares. And then there's some more boutique funds that are, I guess, focusing specifically on this sort of investment demand. It is sometimes hard to make the distinction. All of these companies that have these funds, I guess, have their own sort of criteria, selection criteria for what can and can't go in their funds. And as we've found out, you know, for example, BetaShares used to have Facebook in theirs and in one of their ethical funds, and then they removed it. Sometimes they have banks, sometimes they don't. So they are evolving. To directly answer, how do you know? You need to, I guess, go directly to the fund provider and do a deep dive into what companies are on the list that they're investing in to make a decision for yourself whether or not they're going to be ethical companies or not is probably the short answer to that. One that I would recommend checking out is through a company called Morphic. They have a fund called Morphic Ethical Equities Fund. It's on the ASX, MEC. So go and check that out. They are an asset management company. You can directly invest with them, but this is on the ASX. So that's a bit of a different one to what BetaShares have. So go check that out. And then if you look at this list compiled by Canstar, this is just some the top 10 ethical investment funds for 2018, just for some inspiration. So go and check out Pangana High Conviction Equities Fund. They performed really well. And the thing is, a lot of these are the same. They just avoid investing in companies that make money from things like manufacture and sale of weapons, tobacco, gambling, animal farming, animal testing, activities that give rise to human rights violations, unremediated destruction of the environment, uranium mining and nuclear reactors, and fossil fuel exploration, production, refining, storage, and transport. So that fund there avoids all companies that have anything to do with that. So, you know, seems pretty worthwhile of going to explore. Some other ones include BetaShares Global Sustainability Leaders ETF. There's one called the Nanuk New World Fund. It seems like this company, Pangana, is focused on this sort of stuff. They have a couple in the top 10. So I would go check out Pangana, Morphic Global Equities, and yeah, maybe start with this list, Canstar Top 10 Ethical Investment Funds.
Yeah, yeah, there's heaps out there.
Yeah.
All right, the second part of the question was, what do you guys think of investing in wine?
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, we enjoy drinking wine. Look, to be honest, couldn't really tell you much about the wine market. I know that people do invest in it. There are some great opportunities out there depending on the year or the vintage, where it's come from. You know, your classic Penfolds, I think someone down the road bought $300,000 worth of Penfolds a couple of Christmases ago, and as an investment, you know, bought every single vintage year that they could. But look, to be honest, I don't have my finger on the pulse when it comes to the wine market. There are opportunities to get into the wine market, but look, I enjoy drinking wine is all I can say.
Yeah, right. I think the important thing when you talk about things like investing in wine or art or anything is you're investing in it with the expectation that someone will pay more for it in the future. And if that expectation is wrong, then the wine itself or the artwork has no actual intrinsic value. It's not generating cash that then you can, you know, sort of recover your investment that way, and you can value your investment that way. You're valuing it purely on the idea that someone will pay more for it in the future. So, look, investing in wine is probably more of a hobby than a long-term financial strategy. I'm sure there are people that are going to come at me for that. But, you know, I reckon there'd be very few people in the world that invest in wine and don't invest in, you know, shares or bonds.
Yeah.
But, you know, in saying that, if your investment tanks, at least you can drink it. We can't do the same with equities. So, you know, swings and roundabouts.
Who knows? Maybe one day we'll be in wine as well, Ren.
Maybe. We'll see. Maybe. That's the dream.
Okay. So, next question's coming from Julian. It's about mortgages and investing. And if you have a mortgage and an offset account, what would we consider doing in regards to investing? Do we slog it out to try and make all the repayments and add in lump sums as we go? Do we try to pay it all before starting to invest? You know, I think this just comes down to the question we asked last time, is how do you manage both investing and also trying to achieve other large financial goals that require large capital investment in cash that isn't in, you know, your share portfolio? Again, I think the answer to this, Ren, is what you're going to say is talk to a financial advisor.
Yeah, I think, look, that's got to be the first one.
Yeah.
In general terms, I think there's probably two elements to this, a purely financial one and then a psychological one. So purely financially, if you say that with your mortgage you are paying 4% interest plus all the additional fees, charges, blah, 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 that you come as part of your mortgage, let's say you're paying 5% interest and you can get 8% in the stock market, then hypothetically, let's say that 8% is guaranteed, then you would say, well, it makes more financial sense to invest in the 8% because you're making that difference every year. In saying that, stock market returns are never fully guaranteed. In fact, they're not even partially guaranteed. So financial, like the math side of it would come down to weighing that risk, what you're actually paying. Are there any, you know, bonuses or reductions for paying the mortgage off quicker? You'd need to look at all those terms, and you could do that maths with a professional financial advisor and make a determination. Obviously, the difficult thing is weighing up the uncertainty of what your returns are, but you can try. I think the second thing, and this is probably the important one, well, they're both important, but psychologically, there's probably something to be said for getting your mortgage paid off quicker. You know, it's a massive debt hanging over your head, and psychologically, you're probably not doing yourself any favors if you're investing in volatile assets, i.e. the share market, while you have this massive debt hanging over your head. So speak to a financial advisor, do the maths, but also think about how you are temperamentally suited to, you know, seeing your investment fall 40% while you still have 3/4 of your mortgage hanging over your head, and then make a determination from there, I guess.
Yeah, nice one. So, Ren, I just want to add one thing there. You said, you know, and Julian also mentions putting your money in the market and hoping that you might get a return more than 4%. Now, I'm not plugging the company, but we did go and interview RateSetter, and they're in the cash market, and they have current rates on their 3 to 5 years of 8% and more. So that is an opportunity to explore. By no means take that. Do not take this as advice from me. Certainly discuss this with your financial advisor. But you know, if you have some cash that you could put in there to offset the 4%, and then you know there's still 4% coming in, that's something to consider. It doesn't always have to be stocks that you put that money into. RateSetter is another form of investing, albeit in cash. So that's something to consider as well.
Yeah, and as with everything in life, it's probably somewhere in the middle ground, and putting a little bit away to build your investment portfolio and set yourself up for retirement, and then paying off your mortgage at the same time.
Yeah, nice. Okay, next question.
So Julian asked a second question that we'll ask. If you own ETFs, but shares as well, would you prefer to get paid in dividends or get paid in extra shares? And then if you do get paid in dividends, do you end up having to pay brokerage to move these into your account?
So for me, there's sort of two parts to this. It's what are your goals and I guess your time horizon. If you need the cash flow, if that's the reason that you've bought the ETF, you know, you're later on in life and you might be maybe relying on the cash flow coming in or using it to live a more financially independent life, then obviously by all means take the dividends. But at my stage of investing, you know, taking advantage of compounding interest and that sort of stuff, or the compound effect, getting dividends paid back into stocks or a dividend reinvestment scheme, as it's called, is absolutely the way to go for me. I'm sure you would agree, Ren. I don't need the cash flow coming in at the moment, and the more that you can sort of build the portfolio now, the better off you're going to be in the long term. In terms of getting dividends, a dividend reinvestment scheme, and having to pay brokerage, you don't pay brokerage like you would if it was, you know, buying a stock from scratch. Some companies do charge like a management fee, and they charge on that, and it might fall like their operation cost of doing so. But generally speaking, you're not going to be paying, you know, your $8 or $20 for dividend reinvestment scheme. Do you have anything to add, Ren?
No, I didn't know that some companies charged management fees.
Yeah, well, I looked it up. There's a small amount that's sort of what it falls under because of just the admin of doing it. But generally speaking, it's there's no charge from what I understand.
Yeah. I think my only caveat to what you said before about going for dividends and letting them compound is if you are pretty concentrated in a few stocks and you want to diversify, you might choose to get the cash payment. But then the important thing is that you're then putting it in another stock. You're not taking the cash and spending it.
Mm. No, good point. Okay, I hope that answers the question. Next one comes from Prab. He wants your take, Ren, on esports stocks like Esports Mogul. Do they have potential in the long term, especially after 5G, just like Bitcoin exploded?
So,
what's your take, being the massive gamer that you are?
So I'm going to just park that last bit. Don't expect anything to be like Bitcoin, and don't try and invest by analogy to Bitcoin. I think that's a mistake. But yeah, taking the first part of the... Pardon?
Look at it now.
Yeah, exactly. So looking at esports, a lot of people would be surprised to know that it is getting massive. That some of the teams were recently sold off, and you know they were you know, like the New England Patriots owner bought a team and spent millions on it, and you know it's becoming big. Goldman Sachs thinks that, or has projected that, by 2022, esports will be as popular as the NFL and have over 300 million viewers. So it's not a bad industry to be looking at. So looking at Esports Mogul, it's the company that Prab asked about, it's trading at about 2 cents. I tried to look into it. It seems to be lacking a little bit. It's big claim to fame that it's the first publicly traded esports company in Australia. But when you think about it, esports is going to be an international market. And to my mind, there's a lot better opportunity overseas. So without doing much research into how these companies themselves, like there are a few sort of sectors of the esports ecosystem that you might want to look into. So the game makers themselves, Take-Two Interactive that makes NBA 2K is creating an esports league with the NBA. Some of the big gaming companies, Electronic Arts, Activision Blizzard, Nintendo. So they'll be making the games. They might be a better investment. When you think about what there is going to need to run the computers to play these games, NVIDIA, the chip manufacturer, might be a good investment. Esports is going to be huge in China, and Tencent Holdings has a pretty big gaming division, so they might be one to look at if you want to invest specifically in esports in China. Or if you want companies like Logitech and Sony and stuff like that, they're going to be the ones supplying the gear to esports gamers. They'll be the Nike and Adidas of this ecosystem. So I think esports is definitely not a bad industry to be looking in if you think it's got potential. I'm not a massive gamer, so I can't really talk to the potential of the industry. But I think that the important thing is don't be constrained to just looking in Australia.
Mm.
It's going to be an international industry. And I think, no offense to the esports mogul guys, but there's probably better opportunity overseas.
Yeah, well said, Ren. I think it's going to be one of those industries. Well, it is. It's already a massive industry. We're talking as if it's not, but you know, it's already massive. I think, you know, there's going to be some companies that huge companies that come out of it later on down the track that probably don't even exist at the moment. But you're right. Great industry to be keeping an eye on. Huge opportunity. Not something that I've been looking at closely, but I think this has sort of triggered me to have a bit of a think about what opportunities exist in that space.
Yeah, nice one. All right, so we've got to our last question. So Beck has read Beck has read the Joel Greenblatt book after our book club. So good to see that some people have joined us in our book club.
Yes.
And it got her thinking, instead of buying the top 30 stocks according to his formula, is there an ETF that replicates this? And it's a good question because I actually had the same question after reading the book.
Same.
So, well, is there?
Well, for everyone who has not listened or read the book, we're discussing, she's referring here to Joel Greenblatt's The Little Book That Still Beats the Market, a fantastic book that I highly recommend anyone reads, and then go back and listen to our book club for the month of, November, and check it out. And he goes through what he calls the magic formula for investing. So as far as I could find, Ren, there isn't a direct ETF that replicates his strategy. He has a website where you can go and find the stocks that fall under his filter at a particular point in time, and you could create your own. I guess you couldn't create your own ETF, but you could certainly replicate his strategy, unless you've done some deeper digging and found an ETF that does replicate it. I'd be very interested to know. It did get me thinking about the opportunity for more, you know, personalized ETFs down the track, but that's another conversation.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah, yeah. Equity Mates ETF range.
Yeah.
20,
yeah,
21.
Yeah. Shock. Yeah, we need to patent that. Whatever.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right.
So the short answer for me as well is no. I couldn't find ones that directly replicate his strategy, which is surprising in a way. Greenblatt himself runs Gotham Asset Management, and he runs the Gotham Index Plus Fund, which isn't an ETF, it's a private fund, and it doesn't quite follow his strategy, but it does some really interesting things that's worth looking into, and it's performed quite well over time. It essentially is an S&P 500 index fund that he is overweight the names that he thinks are the best, and then he shorts the names that he thinks are the worst. But unfortunately, the minimum investment to join that fund is $250,000. So probably not so much for the listeners of our podcasts. But if there are any big institutional investors out there that are listening, we will manage your money as the first of the Equity Mates series. So then I just had a look and to see if there were any ETFs that were trying to do similar things. And there are two that people might be interested. They're American funds. Their codes are QVAL, Q-V-A-L, and then IVAL, I-V-A-L. And one is US-based, QVAL, and one is internationally focused, IVAL. And they essentially are algorithmically trying to find good value stocks that are high quality. And look, the funds haven't done particularly well, but they might, they're probably the closest thing that I could find.
Yeah, nice. Okay, so I guess there's opportunity there for us, Ren, to start an ETF company that replicates all of the strategies that we talk about from the books we read.
Yeah.
So stay posted.
Yeah. Maybe we could do an ETF that shorts all the companies that we say we're investing in on this podcast.
Yeah, not bad.
That would do pretty well, I reckon.
Yeah. So that brings us to the end of Ask Us Anything for the months of December and January. Massive thanks to everyone who has written in, and apologies if we have forgotten to include your question, if it's sitting in another one of our social media channels, and we've missed it. We will reply to all of these online with the show notes, and really encourage anyone who has a question to head to our Ask Us Anything forum online, and we will do our best to answer it. If we can't, we often try and get some of the professionals in our network to do it on behalf of us. So please send questions through for the month of February. All right, Ren, well, unless you have anything to add, we will leave it there. And next week, we've got, the next episode, we've got the good old book club. So who has and who hasn't finished the book?
Yeah. We better keep reading.
All right, Ren. Well, good to chat as always. Enjoy your day, and we'll speak next week.
Yeah, sounds good.
Equity Mates and the people appearing in this program may have positions in the companies mentioned. This is general advice only. Please speak to a financial professional to understand how it may pertain to your individual situation.
Hey, Equity Mates. If you're finding it hard to keep up with financial news and everything that's going on in the world, then jump online and sign up to our weekly Thought Starters email. One email a week, no spam. We hate spam. And you will get all the investing news you need to know and some interesting articles to get you thinking. It's free, just like the podcast, and it's just more content for you to enjoy.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock, because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there, especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.